Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday. It's the 20th of January, and very nice to have you with us on, depending where you are, a rainy day, an icy day, a snowy day, a slushy day. But wherever, please be careful. It is not great out, and you know, be careful. That's all we're going to say. You don't need us to tell you to be careful, but be careful. It's one of those things where you think, oh, this is just rain, and then you step down and you slip and you say, oh no, this is more than rain. this would be ice. But good morning, all. It is great to have you here with us. We have a fantastic group. Let me introduce them to you. A reminder, you can be a part of our program by writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Shartok, I hope you are safe. Did you go out in the dink and the dank this morning?
I went out. I went out to the gym early this morning.
Oh, okay. You were inside then.
Yeah, and of course you got to get from the parking lot to the gym.
That is true. And that's how that works. Yes,
that's always a little bit of an issue, but it is there's dink and there's dank. There's no two ways about it.
The snickering presence you hear on the phone is Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
Good. I am fine. I'm in the middle of a snow globe up here. Beautiful.
Yeah, I thought about 2 seconds about, like, do I want to do this? But once you're almost here, it's not so bad. Like, once you get beyond, like, Troy, it's not so bad. But the rest of it is a little dicey. But Judy, thank you very much for filling in this morning. I appreciate it greatly. Investment banker on Wall Street, Mark Whitman, is here. Good morning, Mark. You came far, but you came from the south. I assume a little less snow and ice.
A little less snow and a little more slush. I was out early this morning with the newest member of our household. We just adopted a dog. The poor thing is from Florida, so this is a bit of a shock for her.
Ooh, what kind of dog?
It's a small dog. It's a terrier Yorkie mix. She's about 9 years old. Our household's never had a dog before. So there's some training going on, and we're also trying to help the dog along as well.
Well, that's great. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Good to hear. Well, good luck with that. And the dog lucked out, has a very loving home. That's wonderful. We are awaiting David Soares, who texted me just a few moments ago and said that he was in traffic and in bad weather. So I told him the stupid thing that parents tell their children: be careful and take your time. Don't rush to get in. Your life isn't worth. So I'm sure he's heeding that advice, and we'll be here as soon as he arrives. Again, we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We do love your letters, and we'll get to them, or get to as many as we possibly can, in just a little bit. Let me get to other stuff, which is our stories from this morning, which I thought I had right here in front of me, Alan, but there it is.
There it is. All right. As soon as you said Alan, I said, poof.
Yep. Thank you very
much.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. All right. So, let's begin here. I find this to be an interesting story. I don't really know what to make of it, but here we go. The Supreme Court says it has not identified a person who leaked draft abortion opinion. The leak of the draft opinion overturning Roe v. Wade, published by Politico in May, was an extraordinary breach of the court's usual secrecy. For the record, before I get into the article, let us not forget that it was also very accurate. The draft was pretty much what we got. I remember at the time of the draft, people were saying, oh, this is just a draft and they're going to revise it and all that. Well, that didn't happen. The Supreme Court announced yesterday that an internal investigation had failed to identify who leaked a draft of the opinion overturning Roe v. Wade, the 1973 decision that had established a constitutional right to abortion. In a 20-page report, the court's marshal, Gail Curley, who oversaw the inquiry, said that investigators had conducted 126 formal interviews of 97 employees, all of whom had denied being the source of the leak. But several employees acknowledged that they had told their spouses or partners about the draft opinion and the vote count in violation of the court's confidentiality rules, according to the report. Ah, pillow talk will get you in trouble every time. The investigation did not determine that any of those discussions led to a copy of the draft opinion becoming public. However, investigators also found no forensic evidence of who may have leaked an opinion in examining the court's computer devices, networks, printers, and available call and text logs, according to that 20-page report. The findings raise the possibility that no one will be held accountable, held to account for one of the most stunning breaches of secrecy in the history of the United States Supreme Court. The leak left the court in a state of mutual suspicion about whether a clerk or even a justice betrayed its code of silence about rulings before they are announced. So the question is,
who done it?
Well, yes, that's right. Okay, good point, Alan. Two questions. Who done it, which we still don't know, and two, what changes have we found out who done it?
Yes, that's a very good point. You know, you can find out who done it, and will anybody be held responsible, and is there a mechanism for holding them responsible?
Right. If it's schnook number five in the back office who did it, then nobody probably, you know, you just say, okay, that, you know, that guy's gone, and or that person is gone, and done, we're set. If it's Clarence Thomas or Alito or something like that, or one of their main deputies, then that obviously seems to rise to a much larger concern, right, Mark?
Yeah, Joe, when I heard the initial kerfuffle around this leak and that there would be an investigation, I envisioned people sitting in chairs with all the lie detector wires strapped around them. If you read the report, that's not what happened here. As a matter of fact, if you read the report, it is not clear that they interviewed the justices or their families regarding this leak. So the first question that I came away with is, do they really want an answer as to who's done this and risk alienating half the country? If you look at that report, it seems that they didn't want that answer. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you do 100 interviews. I think they said they did 147 interviews with 197 individuals. And it's a great point. You know, who were those 97 individuals? And what questions are you asking that would actually get to the bottom of it? And
yeah, the interviews and the check of people's phones really seemed like an intelligence test, which was somebody so stupid that they left an obvious trail that we can't ignore? And once they found out that that wasn't the case, they sort of decided to look away and have, I think it's Michael Chertoff, give them the stamp of
no relation.
Yeah, that they give them the stamp of approval and move on. So the other thing I'd say is the procedures for handling sensitive documents within the Supreme Court seem to be no better than that which the National Archives has, frankly. Is anyone else a little disturbed by the fact that the security of the information in this country at the highest levels is basically amounts to older men and women with loose leaf pieces of paper and their interns? It's a little disturbing. So clearly it does underscore the fact with respect to the Supreme Court that something's rotten in the state of Denmark, and they have a lot of work to do in terms of their internal controls.
And you know, let's not forget that this all of with Ginny Thomas and the actions there, and apparently she was not interviewed, from what I understand. So you do. I mean, there's still a lot of question marks that come to this. David, is this any way to run a Supreme Court? David Soares is with us, by the way.
Good,
he arrived safely.
Yeah.
I'd have to agree with Mark. I think what this shows is just how lax we are with security in terms of guarding our most sensitive documents in our country. I don't think that this was ever going to lead to any specific person. I think what the investigators in this case found out is that security here is rather lax, and they had to write a report. My hope is that in doing the investigation, they did identify significant weaknesses that they're also going to follow up with recommendations as to how to tighten things up and establish better protocols within the Supreme Court. But I never had any doubt that this is where they were going to arrive, especially when a few months ago there were rumors swirling that perhaps the source of this leak was the author himself, who had been accused in previous occasions of having openly discussed some of his findings and sharing, you know, some of his opinions with his closest of allies. So I always, you know, thought the finger was going to be pointed here at Alito. But I think if it got any closer to the justices, they would pull back and say nothing to see here, which is, in essence, what we've gotten.
You know, Judy, one of the things that kind of caught my eye about this story was that, and this is both to what Mark and David were saying, it's sort of surprising that it hasn't happened sooner, because once you go into you know, you have all this information in your head, you go out to a nice restaurant in Georgetown, you have a couple drinks, who knows what you start gabbing about.
Right, and you know, there has been strong reporting that Justice Alito did leak the Hobby Lobby case to the press a few years ago. You know, but can I just say, I would love a fuller discussion of why all this stuff needs to be secret in the first place. I think we need far greater transparency of the Supreme Court. I don't see the danger as someone who's worked in journalism for many years of the leak. I know, you know, one speculation was that, you know, Alito leaked it to try to firm up support for his decision, because there was concern whether or not Brett Kavanaugh would, you know, go for a more moderate decision. I agree with everybody. I don't think the Supreme Court wanted to know who did this at all. If they did, they would have farmed it out maybe to the FBI or even someone outside. Having an internal investigation, that's not going to yield any significant results. And, you know, the justices themselves have zero oversight. Even if they had, nothing would have happened. And I think if they had determined that it was one or the other of them, it would further divisions in the court, which are there. I'm not sure. I think everybody has their suspicions about who leaked it. The fact that they're hoping to just sweep this under the rug and go forward. Good luck with that.
It's hard to believe, Alan, that you would say, oh, Justice Alito or Justice Thomas, you were responsible for this, that a report would say that. And number one, and number two, then that anything would be done. You know, then what?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Obviously, something stinks here. There was a question did arise a few seconds ago about something rotten in Denmark, and I have never quite understood what was rotten, you know, in Denmark. But I deviate from the main course here.
I think
do you know?
No, I'm not suggesting to you that I know.
No, I mean, do you know what's rotten in Denmark?
Well, I think our current Supreme Court, the composition of our current Supreme Court might be a little rotten and ideologically very distant from my own perspectives and views. And I think that we're going to be feeling the effects of this current composition for some time to come, because they're going to undo so many of what I would view as, you know, the progress that we've made in our country over the last 60 years. I anticipate that. However, having said that, you know, we did elect a president as a nation, albeit, you know, last one was one I didn't agree with. And there is a process for installing our justices. These are lifetime appointments. And I think the one thing that I've seen in this Supreme Court that I've never seen before is this, the wives of Supreme Court justices taking such, using their positions to take such liberties, to be so vocal. It causes people to be less confident in the decisions that are being made there. And what you hope is that the decisions that are being made there are being made based upon the rule of law and not the political whims of the party that seems to be, in charge. And I think there's an erosion there of the Supreme Court and the people's confidence in the Supreme Court to be that apolitical party and institution that we've come to rely on so much.
David Soares, have you ever seen anything like this in the state courts, in the justice system in New York?
Leaks of decisions? No, that's not something that... I think with respect to our state courts, they... I think they ask questions. They'll follow up and ask questions. They'll ask for supplemental, arguments on paper, which kind of give you a hint as to where they may be going. But this is not something that occurs with any degree of frequency here in our state courts.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be back right after this.
I got to ask.
Well, we lost one of the true greats of rock and roll yesterday. David Crosby passed away at the age of 81. Of course, not only with the Byrds, but with Crosby, Stills, Nash, occasionally Young, and it was obviously one of the greats of rock and roll, two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and in our 11 o'clock hour, we'll remember him. We have a series of interviews that we've done with him over the years, and we'll play some of those. He was a very open, interesting guy. I have to say that I think it was 2018. He came in and he had an interview with another station, and he came in and he used our studio to hook up with another station elsewhere in the country, and he was here and he came out and he looked at me and he said, "I have to get to my orthopedic surgeon," and I said, "Oh, where's your orthopedic surgeon?" And he said, "In Albany," and I said, "Oh, okay," and then he just looked at me and said, "Could you drive me?" I said, so, like, who is going to say to David Crosby, no, I'm not going to drive you? No. So we went down. Everett Road, and drove David Crosby to his orthopedic surgeon appointment. Now, when I left him off, I said, "Well, do you want me to stay and wait for you?" And he goes, "No. I'll get a ride going back." And I said, "Well, just in case, here's my phone number." And then maybe about an hour later, he called me and he said, "Can you come pick me up?" I'm like, "Sure."
Is there a carpool karaoke video floating around there
somewhere of you guys
singing?
No, he wasn't real Southern chatty Cross in the car, but I think he was trying to get some of his medical stuff under wraps. But anyway, but a great presence and such a neat guy, and obviously. The stories, right? I mean, a rich, rich, wild, crazy life. Read his autobiography if you ever get a chance, and your life will be really, really, really boring. So we'll remember David Crosby coming up at 11 o'clock this morning. All right, let's get to other stuff and to what people think about what we were talking about in terms of the Supreme Court and the leak, and why we don't know who leaked the draft opinion. We go to...
Can I respond to something Judy said, which is why all this stuff isn't public? Judy, my view is, and I'd like to share it, there are a couple reasons why we have to be careful about when and how this information is disseminated. In terms of the how, I think it's important both in the executive branch and in the judicial branch that when people are conferring about ideas, they're allowed to sort of not be on record if they want to try something on for size amongst the group that then perhaps upon further examination looks a little silly. I think developing creative and innovative ideas sometimes includes some independence from the fear that you'll be criticized for them. And so I think any reporting after the fact should always sort of protect those involved. Now, if somebody offers to buy Greenland, I'd probably want to hear that. But so long as the ideas are inbound, I also think you have to be very careful about when you disseminate important pieces of information. And I'll give you a perfect example from a banker's standpoint. is if it was if there were regular leaks from the Supreme Court about some of their decisions, particularly those which deal with commerce, you know, people could use those to unfairly enrich themselves and to rig markets. So from an equity standpoint, it is important that these decisions are released to everyone all at once.
Yeah, it is important.
But Mark, there are times when a public issue is being discussed and people say their positions out in public, and you have a free flow of ideas back and forth, and the public gets to listen to that, and it helps the public better understand how the final decision was made. I agree with you. There are some cases, like the Hobby Lobby case. I'm sure that would have affected the share price of Hobby Lobby. But I'm just saying, the Supreme Court in general, it prides itself on its secrecy. There has to be ways to open up the process, even just a crack. I'll put them on C-SPAN. I mean, why do they have to go into their ivory tower and then issue a decision from on high, you know, every once in a while? I just think the public, if they could hear some of the deliberations back and forth, might have a better understanding of why the decision that was reached was reached.
Judy,
I disagree with that entirely. Mm-hmm. I think that there has to be a deliberative process that invites ideas. And I think that having that kind of open dialogue and having to be, as you would say, on the record for everything that comes out of your mouth would have a chilling effect. And you would have the opposite of that.
And I also think, Judy, if after the fact you want to find out where people stand, the Supreme Court's a unique body in that they issue not only majority opinions but dissenting and concurring opinions. I actually think there's more of a roadmap there, and I would love to hear a specific case in which somebody has read all of the data trail and then said, I don't know enough about how people really feel.
So what do you think about them being on camera? That would give the public at least a modicum of understanding of what's happening.
I assume you mean the oral
Justices.
Arguments being on camera.
Yeah, we want to see the eye rolling.
Look, I think there's always a risk that when you do that, people play to the cameras. Not that we've ever seen that recently amongst our ruling class. I think the fact that you get the audio now should be sufficient.
Well, I don't know. I agree. I think it's nice to see what's going on, even if limited people are paying attention to it. Real quick, I just want to give a little idea of what goes into how the sausage is made here. During a break, I usually take my headphones off, and then we have a meeting as to what we're going to talk about. That wasn't really true. We were talking solely about Mark's dog. His new dog. And he was telling us stories about the dog, and we were seeing pictures of the dog. And we were having a conversation about the dog. And then I realized that I heard tinkling of music, and I realized we were back on the air. And I came back, and I said the thing about David Crosby. What I didn't realize is we didn't play a David Crosby song coming back. It was Buffalo Springfield. So I apologize for that. It got into the queue wrong, but I will try to listen more. I was entertaining our guests were entertaining me, to be honest.
That was Yacht Rock, though.
Yeah,
it's
Yacht Rock.
It's Yacht Rock.
Yeah.
It's all part
well,
of the
you
same.
Well, you made that comment, and I didn't even know, because you had your headphones on. I didn't have my headphones on.
Yeah, it was it's a mistake. We're not going to get rid of the guy just yet. But unless I hear Southern Cross at some point before the show is over.
I wanted to make amends for that, because guess what? We got a lot of letters.
But guess
Are
what?
You know,
I just want to say that no puppies were hurt during that entire process.
No. Well, apparently, and I don't want to go too far into this because I don't want to invade Mark's privacy, but apparently this dog, as you said, it was 9 years old, but does very well. I was fascinated by this. Does very well in a more
institutional
setting than a home setting, because the dog may have been in some sort of living facility.
Yeah, the dog came to us because its previous owner passed away, and given some of its behaviors, we suspect that the previous owner and the dog may have spent a bit of time in a organized or assisted living situation before she moved into our household.
Now, is it the fact that it gets on its hind legs and goes to the medicine cabinet waiting for the dispensing of medication that gave you that hint? or something else?
No, I mean, no, it's the fact that it can press the call button. Yeah, that's the good part. All right, Q Buffalo Springfield. All right, let's move on, and we'll go to some other letters here of people who have things to say besides about our musical choices this morning. I do want to get to... about 300 letters about that. Okay, here we go. Supreme Court leak investigation just further lowering the public's perception of the court overall as yet another dysfunctional and overly political branch of government. For both the extreme left and right, it could also represent further sowing of seeds to justify overturning of the existing system. What would that look like?
Well, I'm sure if there were plans that were being hatched to achieve that, they too would be leaked. So, coming to a newspaper near you.
Yeah, well, hip hip hooray.
Let's see. We have two presidents who are misplacing classified documents. We have a joke of a Supreme Court investigation into unprecedented leaks. Let me put this into perspective here. There's a Marine Corps battalion called, 3-6? 3-6? That just lost a single M9 pistol yesterday. A single pistol. Now the entire base is on lockdown. Thousands of Marines are currently locked in their barracks. And if you've ever seen a barracks room, they are tiny. And they will remain on lockdown until that one pistol is found, even if that takes months. Why are our leaders allowed to get away with this negligence while the peasants get held accountable? Well, power has its privileges, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's find that weapon.
Yeah. I mean, to tell you the truth, if there's a missing pistol, I'd like to find it. That seems like a good idea, too. On November 19, 2022, the New York Times published an article, writes Jan, entitled "Former Anti-Abortion Leader Alleges Another Supreme Court Breach," and describes the relentless efforts by anti-abortion leaders to settle up to the justices they targeted as sympathetic to overturning Roe, going so far as to purchase a building near the court for access and taking justices to lunch, getting specially set aside seats at the court's oral arguments, and allegedly having some connection to the advance leak of the Hobby Lobby decision. It doesn't sound like any of this was investigated. Anyone on the panel find this troubling, to say the least?
Look, I find that leak incredibly troubling, even though I might agree with the intentions of the person who did in fact leak it, because they were signaling an alarm, right? But something happened here. Something happened here, which to me is a tremendous breach. I have reverence for the Supreme Court. And I think the Supreme Court should be held, to the highest of standards. But this breach has certainly diminished, that court, in my view. But no more so than the wife of a sitting Supreme Court jurist who is out there, be it on social media or on right-wing networks, basically promoting what we all know is a lie, and then that the husband of that person sitting in the Supreme Court in a lifetime appointment, making major decisions about said election. So that to me is so much more troubling than a leaked draft of an opinion.
That's why the Supreme Court needs to be held more accountable. They have been revered. They have been treated with kid gloves for years. You know, we haven't looked at their finances. We really haven't. We haven't questioned their dealings. We haven't questioned their associations because, you know, they are considered revered. They're revered. And we really, they need to be more accountable. We need to hold, we need to look more closely at what they do, how they do it, and they need to be more open about, you know, when they write a book, where does the money go? When they make appearances and speeches, does all the money go to charity or do they keep it themselves? What's their net worth? They need to be held accountable the same way any other branch of government is.
We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many letters. We'll talk about this for a moment or two longer, and then we'll move on to other topics. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mark Whippen, and David Soares. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Mark Whitman, David Soares, and Judy Patrick, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We have a number of letters on this subject, which will bring us up to the top of the hour. Andy writes, "Hello all, I think everyone is incorrect about the week concerning Roe v. Wade. I think that was leaked on purpose, and it was done enough in advance to let people get used to the idea that it was going to happen, just my opinion." Well, I mean, used to the idea or a trial balloon, I don't know. We have another letter that, and I don't think I have it right in front of me, but I just read it a minute ago, which is, oh, yeah, here it is. Duffy says, "Did whoever leak the information do it because they were proud of the possible decision, or were they incensed by it?" And that would be, that's a question of motive, and yeah, it would be interesting to know in this case.
It would be interesting to know when that person was eventually identified, or persons. I don't think there's any question that the leak was intentional. This wasn't an accidental leak where someone
Left it on the copy machine.
On the copy machine, or maybe electronically forwarded to someone, and it's the wrong attachment that was clicked on. So this was very intentional. I do think, though, that the entire trial balloon theory, to me, doesn't hold much water, because you can't demonstrate whether or not the reaction to it would have been more hostile or aggressive or more passive based upon, I think the people, there was an explosion in our country, and rightfully so.
"The courts exist primarily to resolve disputes between parties. Their decisions set precedent, but they are not just yet another public form of debate of public issues. Fairness to the parties requires that they operate under rules that protect the process for both sides." So that addressing Judy's point about transparency. Let me see. Here's somebody who uses the F word. All right, I'll take that one out. And then
Friday,
that's right. Or Florida, I think.
Florida.
Yeah. Let's see. We go to Mark. A year from now, I suspect we'll be saying it's not the leak, it's the cover-up. Enterprising journalists will trace the leak back to the source, and the scandal will further lower the esteem in which the court is held. Judy, I think that is a nice notion, but it seems like my understanding is it's very, very hard to investigate the Supreme Court.
Right, and I mean, there's one reporter for sure who knows who it is. It's the political reporter who got the leaked document. I'm sure he is. It's an interesting position for him to be on. No, he's not going to say what it is, but you know, eventually we will find out. It might be 50 years. I mean, it took us 50 years to find out who Deep Throat was in the Watergate scandal. But these things have a way of eventually working their way out. Again, this was not a serious investigation, and the IT standard at the Supreme Court is I have better IT, I think, at my house than they do at the Supreme Court, and we spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to run the Supreme Court. Why haven't they upgraded? Why isn't there better security? If they really care about it, I mean, if they say they do, let's put our money where their mouth is.
Yeah.
Judy, should the reporter be required to disclose their source in this case?
Given your
position on transparency.
Uh-huh. No.
And by the way, I'm holding up both of my fists to my face because I'm trying to protect myself at all times.
No, because, you know, believe it or not, journalism is, you know, sometimes they call us the fourth estate, but we actually aren't part of the government. We're private institutions, and our ability to operate independently is recognized in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. So, no, we don't have to disclose. Alan and I talk about this a lot on the Media Project, you know, how much profit a privately held news organization makes. That's not transparency. We try to be transparency in how we operate and how we deal with sources and what our procedures are for vetting stories or running editorials. I think that's an important level of transparency. And I, you know, if I could get that from the Supreme Court, I'd even be happy.
David, no, you're good.
I'm back in the corner, sitting, you know, on my bench, waiting for a little bit of water to come out for the next round.
Let's see. So a pistol turns up missing on a Marine base, and there is a lockdown until it's found. And if you believe today's Post, in Virginia, a six-year-old is able to get a gun off a closet shelf, bring the gun to school, and lock the trigger, lock outwit the backpack search, get the adults to stop looking despite a tip saying he had a gun, bring the gun into the classroom, and shoot a teacher. And so far, the answer is no one screwed up. Wow. That's a much different story, and yet it's very apropos.
Okay, just for the moment, who did screw up? The parents certainly screwed up for leaving the gun around, right?
Well, a six-year-old, no matter what, and this is my opinion, I do not have children. I will say that up front, but it seems to me I was a six-year-old. I don't think I should have ever had access to a gun.
Criminal negligence. That's called criminal negligence on the part of the adults who are responsible for the home.
And so what's our experience there, David? Do they get arrested?
Yes, you get prosecuted. You get you get charged, you get indicted.
And this is one of these stories. This is a lot like the letter that was a moment ago of talking about, you know, eventually we'll find out, some enterprising reporters will go in. And I think this is the same case, same thing in this case of this kid going in to school and shooting the teacher. There's a lot of stuff coming out now about that the school even knew that he had the gun. And it's a wild story. And I'm sure once all the facts come out, you'll get it doesn't make it any less troubling, by the way.
First of all, two words that should never even exist in the same sentence is school and gun. And I cannot wait, right, for the suits, for the lawsuits. I can't wait for the depositions to read exactly what was in the mind of the individuals who are responsible for providing security for all of the other students, to include faculty and other staff. And this idea that someone had knowledge of this prior to this event taking place, when we're talking about teachers being shot in class by students, this is a brand new, it's a new low. And we should
in first grade too. Yeah. I mean I know it's shades of gray here, but in first grade.
In first grade. I mean, this is, it's breathtaking. It's shocking. And again, I want to wait for, I just want to wait for all of the reports, all of the statements that are going to be provided by all of the individuals who, again, are responsible for providing care, security for everyone within the school.
All right, let's go back. We just have time for a couple more letters, and then we'll move on to other subjects after news with Raymond. How about this scenario? Someone accidentally either left it in the garbage and the janitor found it and leaked it. Maybe that is why they cannot find a guilty party. Well, that was to David's point of, you know, is this obviously done on purpose. And so also we go to Mark, who said even more than the leak itself, how do we explain that none of the anti-abortion arguments mention males? They seem to treat pregnancy as a result of an immaculate conception indulged in by women all by themselves. That from Victoria.
I like that statement, Victoria.
And let's see. And then this one, that goes to, come on, there was never an intention of identifying who leaked the draft. I agree with Mark, because what he said is essentially the exact same thing I said yesterday. He beat you, Mark. The nine justices got together and decided, okay, we're going to make it look like we're putting in at least a half-hearted effort to finding out who leaked the info, and we'll spend a few months, or at least till most people forget about the breach, and then we'll say we don't know who done it. In the process, we'll finger everyone saying everybody leaked it a little bit. Because the bottom line is that if you out one person, well, then what do you do? All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Mark Whitman, David Soares, and who did I forget? Judy Patrick. We'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design with cabinets from Wellborn and Merlat, and quartz countertops from Cambria. American-made products sold locally. CurtisLumber.com.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC-FM, HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN, HD 90.3 Remsen, Utica, WAMK, HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR, HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL, HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN, HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC, HD 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ, HD 105.1 Great Barrington, WWES, HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANZ, HD 90.1 Stamford, WANR, 88.5 Brewster, WQQQ, 103.3 Sharon, WAMCAN, 1400 Albany.
Support comes from Greenfield Savings Bank Wealth Management and Trust Services, offering confidential and individually managed portfolios, estate settlement, and trust administration. GreenfieldSavings.com. And from Union Hall Supply Company, serving the Capital Region, specializing in modern menswear and accessories, with an in-store tasting craft beer bar, UnionHallSupplyCO.com.
This is WAMC News. I'm Ray Graff. U.S. wireless carrier T-Mobile says hackers have stolen data on 37 million customers. It says the breach occurred in late November and was discovered January 5th. The company said Thursday in a regulatory filing that the unidentified intruder obtained data including addresses, phone numbers, and dates of birth. It said the exposed data did not include bank account or credit card information, social security numbers, or other IDs or passwords. T-Mobile said it has notified law enforcement and federal agencies, which it did not name. The company says it did not expect the incident to have material impact on its operations. A Romanian official says a judge has granted prosecutors' requests to extend the arrest of Andrew Tate by 30 days. Tate is a former professional kickboxer and social media personality who was previously banned from various platforms for expressing misogynistic views and hate speech. The 36-year-old British U.S. citizen was initially detained December 29th in Romania's capital on charges of being part of an organized crime group, human trafficking, and rape. His brother and two Romanian women were arrested and held in the same case. The Tate brothers are likely to appeal today's extension. A post on Andrew Tate's Twitter account on Thursday proclaimed their innocence. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey came to Berkshire County Thursday for the first time since taking office this month and used the occasion to announce two bills she called critical to state funding for Western Massachusetts communities. Joining local officials for a tour of Greylock Works in North Adams, Healey said one bill is for nearly $1 billion in bond authorization for housing and economic development, while the other authorizes $400 million in borrowing for road and bridge projects. The Democrat says she's making good on a campaign pledge to serve the entire state.
For me, it is absolutely critical that the people of the Berkshires and Western Massachusetts know that they have a partner in us, know that they have an administration who sees you, who hears you, and who's going to work with you.
Healey also visited Ludlow during the trip. According to an audit of New York's plan to protect pollinators, the state needs to increase efforts to help save honeybees. WSHU's J.D. Allen explains.
New York established its pollinator protection plan in 2016 to safeguard bees and other pollinators after decades of drastic population declines. Under the plan, the State Department of Agriculture and Markets create policies aimed at invasive pests and diseases, as well as pesticides and other chemicals that kill bees. State Controller Tom DiNapoli's audit found that the department could do more to enforce a 2021 law that requires beekeepers to register their colonies and report the health of their honeybees. He also wants New York to develop a plan to ensure new shipments of climate-resilient honeybees into the state are certified disease and parasite-free. For WAMC News, I'm J.D. Allen.
On Wall Street, the Dow down 57 at 32,987. NASDAQ up 96 at 10,948. Some light rain, some snow this morning, then scattered rain and snow showers this afternoon. Highs in the 30s. Most places will see a coating up to 2 inches of wet snow by the end of the day. Maybe 3 to 4 inches in the Adirondacks on Green Mountains. A few snow showers linger tonight. Lows in the 20s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow in the 30s. At last report, light snow, 33 in Colchester, Vermont, snow and 33 in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and we have cloudy skies with some snow, 33 in Utica, rain and 35 in Albany. More WAMC News next hour.
I like seeing you wearing your Giants jersey.
And I got my Giants hat.
Yeah, no, I can't wear you had that headphones on yesterday. You look great.
You know,
you
only do this because Soares is a Cowboys fan, okay?
That's absolutely true.
That's the bottom line.
Now your team plays tomorrow against the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, they may not win.
Dirty birds, the dirty birds.
You know
from
what?
Philly.
Look, I am from Philadelphia, and much like David, we were just talking about this because David is from New England, and you would think he would be a Patriots fan.
Right.
He is not.
No,
I'm from Philadelphia. I am not a Philadelphia fan, but so I will be rooting for your Giants as well.
So what we can say here is we agree everyone hates Philadelphia sports teams, right?
Well, yes. I love the Phillies.
Any city where law enforcement has to grease the poles to keep their fans from creating harm.
Yes.
We need to not like them.
I witnessed that. I saw them do that. That is amazing. That is just stunning to me.
Greasing poles.
Now, so Dallas, I don't know, does Dallas have a shot?
Yes, they do. In fact, I think that it's, you know, listen, let's be realistic. The Eagles are very good.
Yes.
Giants, they listen, the Eagles went on 63-yard field goals against the Giants, so I'm not really hopeful. But a Cowboys-Eagles championship game or a Giants-Cowboys championship game, both good.
Yeah.
Very good for America, right?
Yes.
Mark,
yes,
you want in on this? No? No. Judy, you want in on this?
I know Shartok's in on it.
I just want to know whether WAMC has a dress code.
All right,
indeed,
I'm done.
Indeed it does.
I have to say I'm rooting for Buffalo. I hope Buffalo wins.
Yeah.
I would love to see Buffalo win. They deserve it. And, you know, I want them to win before they get the new stadium.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, boy. Well, that's your next hour of the show. Enjoy.
All right. Bray, thank you very much. Have a great weekend. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Remembering David Crosby this morning, who passed away yesterday at the age of 81. We'll be remembering him in our 11 o'clock hour on the program this morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel, Alan Chartok, Mark Whitman, Judy Patrick, and David Soares. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. There's that, I think it was... was it Get Smart? Who was the where they would say, I think it was Don Adams who would say, missed it by that much, right?
Yeah,
wasn't
I think
that
it was Get Smart.
Yeah, Get Smart. Missed it by that much. Yesterday, we got off the air, and about within 10 minutes of us getting off the air and talking, we got the Alec Baldwin story. And so we didn't get to talk about it because it happened after we were off. But Alec Baldwin charged with involuntary manslaughter for the killing in Rust. For those of you who may not be familiar with the particulars of this story, and I would imagine that isn't many of you, but for more than a year, the actor has tried to defend himself against the suggestion that he bore any responsibility for the fatal shooting of a cinematographer on the set of Rust, a low-budget Western he was filming in the outskirts of Santa Fe, New Mexico. He told detectives that he had been assured the gun he was rehearsing with that day did not contain live ammunition, sat down for an extensive TV interview with George Stephanopoulos, sought indemnification from financial liability in the case, and then sued crew members on the film, claiming that they were responsible for handing him a loaded gun. But on Thursday, prosecutors said they would charge him with two counts of involuntary manslaughter in the killing of the cinematographer of that film, saying they believed he had a duty to ensure the revolver was safe to handle. The DA made the case that both as an actor and as a producer on the film, he had the responsibility to make sure, no matter who else was there, that the gun was not a live gun. Okay, so Andrea Reeb is a special prosecutor appointed by the Santa Fe County's District Attorney Office to handle the case. We're trying to definitely make it clear that everybody is equal under the law, including A-list actors like Alec Baldwin. Is Alec Baldwin still an A-list actor? I guess so. Okay. David, I'm going to go to your legal advice on this.
Well, boy. You know, there used to be a saying that you can indict a ham sandwich, and I hate that saying because it is still very difficult, and there is a very technical process in bringing charges against someone, and therefore, I think when people use those words, it tends to undermine just how complex sometimes these cases can be. Now, in this instance here, I'm struggling to figure out how it is that the special prosecutor in this case has decided to bring about charges against specifically Alec Baldwin. And the charges are involuntary manslaughter, as it's identified or titled in New Mexico, which is the unintentional killing of a person. Now, I don't think there's any question that the proximate cause of the death of this cinematographer happened to be the gun that was held by Alec Baldwin and was discharged by Alec Baldwin, the actor. But here's where it is that things get a bit murky and interesting, because the three elements that you need in order to establish involuntary manslaughter is that the defendant committed the act resulting in a death. You can check that box, because
correct.
I think that's not under dispute.
Right.
That the defendant knew the conduct might endanger lives. This is where we get into the murkiness of this particular charge, that the defendant knew that his conduct might endanger lives. And then, lastly, the third, that the act was inherently dangerous or was done with a lack of concern for human life. Now, where we see these charges oftentimes appear is when you have a person who's consuming alcohol and operating a motor vehicle, and then you know, they strike a pedestrian, killing the pedestrian. You also see it in instances where you have a burglar who burglarizes a home or burglarizes a business, and the person who turns around and finds them there is shocked. They have a heart attack and die. Bar fights where you might strike a person hits their head, and the person dies as a result of injuries in their heads. But in this case, in a movie set where you have people who you bring on to that set, that their expertise is in handling guns and providing, you know,
right.
Dummy ammunition.
And the armor is also charged in this case.
They are as well. This idea that you have a process within a set where you have people who are assuring the end user that the in what I think the code here is, you have a cold gun,
yeah,
and that person then relies on that information and you know acts out the scene. I don't know that we're going to have successful prosecutions in this case.
The second of the criteria you mentioned was mm-hmm. what?
Knew that the conduct might endanger lives.
So if you, I mean, it sort of gets to what you were saying, that no term you ever want to hear is school and gun. But I mean, if you're playing with a gun, whether it's cold or hot or whatever, it's a gun, right?
That's true.
I mean, so you know not to. I mean, I think we were all told, you know, never, you know, keep the scissors down when you walk, don't run, that kind of thing. That that seems to be inherent in dealing with anything that can discharge.
So, David, is it fair for me to ask you whether you would have or not indicted?
Under these facts?
Yes.
Absolutely not. I think, look, you have a scene. You have a scene that calls for the actor to point the revolver.
Correct.
And to fire.
Yes.
Right? You have experts that are on the set. Now, that what's interesting here is whether or not you're talking about Alec Baldwin as the actor, Alec Baldwin as the producer, right, and responsible for the environment, right? Because I would argue that Alec Baldwin, the actor who was the end user, who was following a script, which is a direction and is supposed to carry out, you know, some act, I would argue that that person I don't see a theory by which you could absolutely fine him by proof beyond a reasonable doubt of having committed involuntary manslaughter. Now, Alec Baldwin, the producer, who's responsible for hiring the firm that's coming on to do safety checks on weapons, who's also responsible for purchasing the ammunition, you know, that there, when you can establish that he has a duty and somehow he behaved and exuded conduct which the normal, reasonable person would find to be unreasonable,
yeah,
you might have a much more sound argument and theory of a prosecution under those conditions.
One of the things that I found interesting about the case is that morning, prior to the scene being shot in the afternoon after lunch, that morning, an entire crew of, I believe, 15 people walked off the set because they said it was dangerous. There had already been two accidental discharges of weapons on the set. And they said, and apparently one of the camera operators went up to Alec Baldwin and said, I'm leaving because this isn't safe. And does that not figure into what he knows that there should be a trust issue there of the person who I'm not saying this with any, but the very young woman who was in charge of the guns, the armor, who I believe was 24, 25 years old, was there. Her father is a well-known armor in the business. This is only her second job. So regardless that there were great concerns that were apparently brought to the point where people left, does that play into this?
That does play into it, but that does play into it in the sense that we're now talking about Alec Baldwin, the producer, not Alec Baldwin as the actor. You have to establish that Alec Baldwin, you know, had a duty as the producer to maintain and operate a safe environment. And although Alec Baldwin, through other incidents, had prior knowledge that there were issues with respect to safety, specifically as it related to weapons. And even in the face of that knowledge, he engaged in unreasonable behavior by allowing it's actually an omission where he failed to take any act because the death of an individual, harm coming to an individual was foreseeable, and therefore he failed in taking any act that would have prevented that death. You might have a better chance under that theory. However, again, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and I don't know what other people who have been interviewed may have said and whether or not they did in fact file complaints. There could be a whole host of things that would support that theory in that prosecutor's investigation.
One more question, then I'll let the rest of the group in here. But I found it interesting, too, because the director of the film was the person who handed Alec Baldwin the gun and allegedly said, this is a cold gun, according to Alec Baldwin. He, the director, was not charged because he was shot. He was one of the victims of the shooting, and he apparently worked with the prosecution and worked with them, so there were no charges because of A, his injuries, and B, he cooperated with them.
I believe he pled.
He pled.
I believe he pled, yes, to what would be, reckless endangerment, what would be the equivalent of a reckless endangerment charge here. So he pled, and has provided cooperation. And again, it's difficult not to, if you don't know exactly what other witnesses on that set have said, it just, based upon what has been said by the special prosecutor thus far, gives one pause as to the validity or probably the success of this prosecution. However, I think when you start, again, it's a different analysis. If you're doing the analysis as Alec Baldwin, the actor, you certainly come out one way. But if you do the analysis as Alec Baldwin, the producer, and someone who had a duty to provide a safe working environment, a safe set, then you might have a theory that holds a little more water.
And David, how do you separate those? In other words, the actor, the producer, if you're a prosecutor, you have to hold somebody responsible, but how do you separate those two out?
I don't know that they first of all, they haven't. It doesn't appear from anything that I've read publicly that they have. And perhaps they shouldn't, because depending on the evidence that you have, you may have enough evidence to pursue a prosecution under both theories. And why deprive yourself of an opportunity at a successful conviction by eliminating one at the outset? Like I said, I mean, there's a number of people who I'm assuming the investigators in this case have engaged with, and based upon all of the information and data that they've received, is at the root of this. My hope is that we're not simply, bringing an indictment because it's a high profile defendant, and you know, this can be.
Well, this is going to sound cynical, mm-hmm. but I mean that could happen, right? I mean,
I was thinking the same thing,
yeah. Right? I mean, you say, okay, I'm in this office, I'm in Santa Fe, and I get this A-list actor, and we got and maybe some of the information it's sort of on the line, and you know what you're getting into as far as the press and the exposure.
Which is why you would hope that any prosecutor would not take any of those issues into consideration and just go where the evidence takes them. Now, again, go back through the three elements and think about it this time in the context of Alec Baldwin, you know, the executive producer. Think about whether or not the defendant, you know, committed an act resulting in the death. Under that analysis, you could say yes. You based upon what you've previously said about other people being hurt on the set and people thinking it's dangerous, think about the second element, that the defendant knew the conduct might endanger lives. Well, now he has reason to know because you have people walking off the set. And then you think about the third element, that the act was inherently dangerous or was done with a lack of common concern for human life. Under that analysis, Alec Baldwin, the producer, if all of these things that you say are true, people walked off the set, other people were hurt at different times during
the
shoot.
I'm not defending them.
No, you're not. I'm not saying you. I'm just saying, yeah.
No, I understand.
And under that analysis, you could say, okay, yeah, there might be proof beyond a reasonable doubt that could cause liability here for Alec Baldwin.
Mark.
The other thing to note here is that everyone is suing one another here.
Everyone's suing
everyone. Everyone is suing one another. So if you're the prosecutor in this case and you're hoping to have a successful conviction, understand that there are different tracks that everyone who is a target of either of you or witnesses in your case also have these collateral proceedings.
I mean, the one thing I think we know for sure, for absolute sure, was that he did not intentionally put a bullet in a gun to shoot a woman on the set of his film.
Yeah, and if he did, then we would be talking about not involuntary manslaughter. We would be talking about voluntary manslaughter. We'd be talking about murder.
Right.
Is what we'd be talking
different.
About.
Mark.
Well, on the Alec Baldwin as an actor front, I don't know where it comes out legally, but anybody who's handled a gun, and I shoot sporting clays, has been taught that if somebody checks a gun, tells you it's unloaded, and hands you the gun, the first thing you do is assume the gun is loaded and proceed accordingly. Now, I understand that may not be always the practice in Hollywood. Also, guns are pretty effective and simple tools, right? They shoot projectiles at whatever you point them at. So the seems to me the rule that most people are told in gun training is you don't point that thing ever at something you don't want to shoot. Alec Baldwin violated both of those. I don't know where legally that means his responsibility falls out. I trust you in your analysis of the charges, but somewhere along the line he did something and it should be illegal. In terms of the Alec Baldwin as a producer, I have heard that the Rust case is now used in workshops on gun safety, and that there are more than a dozen failures in practice that have been identified on that particular set. And I think, Joe and David, I think your discussion about Alec Baldwin as a producer probably facing more legal peril on that side is probably correct, given what the industry seems to say about the practices.
I always thought he'd just end up in jail for making Boss Baby, but no, apparently there's other avenues.
Well, the other thing too here is boy, the culture that we seem to be immersed in right now, where whether you're an elected official and or an actor, you just feel the need to use social media, or you feel the need to engage in the media, and if you do so, you are doing so at your own peril. There are so many statements and interviews that were done, some of which I even believe in this instance may have angered people, frustrated some people, and
well, when he said he didn't pull the trigger, people wonder, well, how does that happen when you don't pull the trigger?
Well, I mean, that's what he said, but I think there will be evidence, and I think there is evidence that's the irrefutable evidence that he in fact did.
Yeah, that's what the FBI has concluded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Judy, anything on this?
Yeah, this whole issue of an executive producer, what does that actually mean? Because there were more than one executive producer.
I would just like to correct. He was producer, not executive producer, but producer.
Right.
But go ahead.
There were a number of producers on this film.
Yes.
And sometimes I think they're just getting, you know, name credits. If you watch any television or movie, you see at the end, you know, the star gets a producer credit. What does that actually mean? And in fact, there's a proposed settlement with the family of the woman who died, and it calls for resuming filming of Rust, and they will make her husband, the widower, the executive producer. So what does that mean? What responsibility does the role of executive producer have? And if that really is the issue, why weren't all the producers charged?
I mean, it's a great question.
Well, I think those titles are oftentimes given, you know, as a way to recoup dollars or to share
to get
in
money,
profits,
to get support. It was a $5 million film or whatever.
But I think when the discussion about Alec Baldwin being a producer, I think the discussion here is fundamentally whether or not he had responsibilities beyond just acting in this production, whether or not he was responsible for cast and crew, for hiring all of the subcontractors. That's what I think.
For loading the gun?
Well, I think the negligence here is hiring the people who are supposed to be responsible for safety on the set who were not, in fact, the best. Maybe they're not the best
The armor, as Joe mentioned, was a newbie. And I think it's been noted that it was somewhat unusual. She also had a job regarding other non-firearm props, and it's basically you don't want the person responsible for firearm safety multitasking. Probably a bad idea.
We'll take a quick break. We have a lot of letters. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to The Roundtable. Last call for letters, and we'll return after news from the BBC. I was just looking for the picture. Somewhere in my photo stream, there's a picture of Alan and I with Alec Baldwin when we met him at SPAC. You remember that, Alan?
No.
He's not. As your lawyer, Alan, I would say, no comment.
Yeah, I never met the man of my life. I'd have no idea.
And if I did, I would have to have a memory.
Yeah. Well, he liked you. He listened to you. I think he listened. He had some Berkshire connection. But it was
that
day. All right, let's go to, we have a lot of letters on this. As a professional theater administrator, this is a tough one. Taking this incident down to the very lowest common denominator, the production management crew hires a qualified, competent, quote-unquote, professional props person to care for and maintain the guns. In this case, I believe they had a specific qualified professional firearms keeper. Typically, albeit standard procedure, Alec Baldwin, even as a producer, quote unquote, who really knows what the term implies here. That term has come to mean a lot of different things, would never be expected to be involved in this process. He probably didn't even know who that person was, which he pretty much has said. I think he met the person the day before or something like that.
Sounds reasonable to me. David Soares, how about you?
Yeah, you're handling the prop guns I met you the day before at a gas station and I give you a job. That doesn't sound reasonable to me.
Oh.
Well, I mean, if you have a lot of people coming in on a set or doing different things, I mean, I don't know. Okay. The continued
it's
comments
a Western.
About...
It's actually a Western, right, this movie?
Yes.
And so, like, revolvers are going to be, like, front and center?
Well, Mary Kay, our letter writer, makes that exact point. The continued comments about not pointing a gun at anyone ever in this case makes no sense, as they were filming a Western where gunfights are part of the stories. But the idea...
Who's the letter writer?
Mary.
Mary. It's called an angle.
Yeah. Also, you don't load it. You know, they're not a loaded gun.
Yeah, but remove the gun from this from the analysis. Okay, let's say that it's Top Gun, right? Who's responsible for caring for the plane? We know that the jets are going to be, you know, flying at some point. Who's responsible for that? How about if it's if the central thrust of the movie is a race car? You know, who's responsible for making sure that the brakes are working? There is a duty here, and that duty had been breached by someone. The question is whether that someone is Alec Baldwin, the actor, or Alec Baldwin, the producer who has other responsibilities beyond acting a scene out.
I think Kathleen speaks for many by saying, full disclosure, I do not like Alec Baldwin. But I don't think he should be charged for this crime because he is unlikable. My understanding is that the gun was loaded with blanks, which would fire and make a noise but not harm anyone. My understanding is that within the bullet, and Mark, you would probably know more about this than I do, but you would take out most of the gunpowder. There is a wadding that is put into the chamber of the bullet, and that would allow, once it is struck with the hammer, that it will make the sound of a gun, but it does not propel that object.
Why is Mark an expert on that?
Because Mark
thing
said he is a gun person.
Oh, I see.
I said I shoot sporting clays.
Yeah.
Joe, my understanding is that, first of all, even the blanks can be dangerous. A couple of the deaths that happened on set historically were from people who put the gun too close to themselves.
Well, even that padding,
the wadding right,
can come out at such a force,
yeah,
it can do damage.
And my other understanding is that if you look at the ammunition, there's a definitive difference between live ammunition and a blank, and this was live ammunition. This was not a blank. This was live ammunition, and typically on a set in Hollywood, my understanding is if an armorer finds out that there is live ammunition anywhere on the set, everything gets shut down until you're sure that that's no longer the case. And the other issue here is that Alec Baldwin, my understanding is he financed a lot of this himself. So in this case, producer really meant he did have some responsibility. And as Joe mentioned, there had been other accidental firearm just discharges previous to this, so a higher standard of care than normal would have been expected on the part of those responsible, and I presume he was amongst that set of people, but I guess the case in court will sort this out.
Damn it, Joe! Don't be an idiot. It's a picture of Alan and me, not Alan and I. Okay. I
apologize. Oh, boy. Well, speaking for me...
My apologies. My apologies. Please don't get near a loaded gun. Why in the world was there live ammunition on the set? Who brought it? Well, and that's the big question, right? Why would you have loaded ammunition in any case? There were some early, and again, I have no idea if this is true. There were some, as David indicated, many people started telling stories, a lot of disgruntled workers who were getting paid very little and having to travel travel and so forth are now everybody's suing everybody else. But there were stories of people going out into the prairie there and shooting guns and so forth. So who knows?
Yeah, it's the cross pollination of activities with live rounds and activities we're supposed to have dummy rounds. That is so dangerous. And the fact that you had the same two individuals, the Ms. Gutierrez, I forget her last name, but and the other, her boss, who pled to the reckless endangerment charge, that is just so irresponsible to have those two activities taking place in the same work environment.
I was a background actor on a series playing a police officer, writes Carolyn. I carried a holstered prop gun. The number of controls in place to monitor me and the fake, shouty caps, fake gun were intense. Also, there's a protocol for not pointing a gun at anyone else. Yeah.
Why are they even using real guns in movies? Can't they use dummies? In this day and age, can't they make a dummy gun that looks a lot like a real gun?
That's a very good point.
Well, those are good points, Judith, but I think this comes back to the thing that Mark said about Alec Baldwin having some of his own dollars associated with the production here, is that every time you think about, okay, let's give them green toy guns, and then we could, post-production, we can add guns here. That's additional dollars. And I think the business model for these movie productions are, make the movie for the least amount of money and try to make as much money out there commercially.
Christopher Wright, shouldn't you all be talking about how much you hate Trump? Enough with Alec Baldwin. My God. This is to your point, Judy, and I think it's a good point. If you can create universes in space movies, monsters, aliens, and even Harry Potter, use sound effects and CGI to create a gunshot, smoke, and sounds. This can be solved in Hollywood post-production, and that is from Tom, a super fan from Woodstock, New York. We go to this letter. This is not about what we're talking about. How about this one? Still trying to wrap my head around why there was any live ammunition on the set. I would have expected that nothing but blanks would have been used in the film. And I guess, we'll find out more questions. We'll find out more answers as to what type of bullet, what was the casing and so forth. If Kyle Rittenhouse cannot get off scot-free for murdering two people and shooting another, Alec Baldwin should not even be considered to have done anything wrong. And
that comes down to Joe, where we, the public, and the public's perception becomes part of whether or not somebody becomes prosecuted, or, for want of a better word, persecuted.
And here's another, this will be the last letter I'll read on this, but there's just another point, because we have to get out now. But I can't help but wonder if this onset tragedy could have been a right-wing setup. Alec Baldwin has certainly gotten under the MAGA skin, and the cinematographer is Ukrainian. Hard not to notice this.
Oh, dear God.
No. And yet I never noticed that.
No, I
me neither.
Well. All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody for being with us. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
too.
It. Judy Patrick, thank you for filling in this morning.
You are welcome.
Great to have you here as always. Mark Whitman, take care of the dog.
Yeah. Have a nice weekend,
good
everyone.
Good luck. And David, always a pleasure. Good luck, Cowboys.
Go low. Go Cowboys.
We'll be back right after this.